Hi, everyone. This is Emmy and Bethany here, just hopping on to say that listener discretion is advised for this episode. Some of the topics that we discuss may be a little more sensitive to you as a listener, so please make sure you read the description on what books and topics we discuss before moving forward. Otherwise, you may want to skip this episode. Enjoy! Hi everyone, thank you for joining. Today we are going to be talking to several staff members about their favorite banned books because Banned Books Week is happening. It's September 27th to October 3rd, 2020. According to the ALA, the American Library Association, Banned Books Week began in the 1980s and spotlights current and historical attempts to censor books in libraries and schools. The books on the banned books list have all been targeted for removal or restriction in libraries and schools. This week is a way to bring attention to censorship and the harm that it causes, and libraries are against censorship, so we are very passionate about this topic. So to start us off, we have Andy. He's a frequent guest on our podcast. Hi, Andy.
Hello.
And we also have Emmy.
I'm here.
Emmy's the co-host.
Let's just say what it is. I'm here.
So, Andy, start us off and tell us what your favorite banned book is.
I like to read a bunch of banned books. I've always felt it was kind of, edgy is not a term that would actually describe me in any way, but like hip. Ooh, that was actually worse to say. I enjoy reading banned books for the intellectual stimulation.
No.
Anyway, to actually answer your question, I would say that my favorite banned book is probably The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Mm-hmm. Those of you reading, listening at home would probably recognize it. It's an unusual shape for a book. It's a little bit shorter than like a regular trade paperback, and it's sort of a square shape with like a bright green cover. That's why it stood out to me in the first place. You're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but I was like, this is an unusual one. I'm interested. Mm-hmm. It's also written as a series of diary entries, which is cool. The only other book that immediately springs to mind that's the same way is Dracula. Dracula is also like diary entries and letters and telegrams and stuff. It's called an epistolary novel. It's a little fun fact that you probably already knew, but
not me.
Cool. But yeah, so I enjoyed it because it really does a good job of capturing the spirit of being like a teenager at that particular moment in time, which would be the late 90s, early 2000s, I think. I mean, that's when I read it, and it definitely seemed to resonate with me at that time. One of the things that I think kind of makes me relate to it is that the protagonist is sort of a nerd who's like entering into this, like trying to understand or relate with some of the cooler kids in school. And that was definitely something that was true to my life. Imagine a nerd coming to work in a library. What? No, but so yeah, anyway, it resonated with me. I know why it's been banned. There's mentions of drugs. There's some profanity. I think we had been discussing it earlier. There might be a mention of a sexual assault as well. There are definitely some adult concepts in there, but that's the period of time in your life where you're often being exposed to adult concepts for the first time and having to wrestle with those yourself and figure out what your response to those based on who you are is going to be. And something about that, I felt it really captured the, if you'll pardon the silly word, like the zeitgeist of being like 16 in like 2002 or 2001, and cell phones aren't big yet, and the computer is something that you have to go home and sit down at rather than like is in your pocket all the time. So really, for me, it was a lot of those things, the capturing that spirit of like trying to figure things out at that age. There's a real sense of like kind of wistfulness in that book that I really liked. So long answer, but that's sort of my feeling.
It's kind of interesting because it has been – so challenged is different from banning in that it has been requested to be removed. Banning is the actual
It's been like removed.
Yeah, it's actually been removed. Mm-hmm. It's not being reviewed. And the first instance was in 2003 in Fairfax for all of the reasons that you said, profanity, drug abuse, sexually explicit descriptions. And the last time it was challenged was in 2019. So it's still very relevant. It's still being challenged. It's also been removed from a couple school districts throughout the country as late as 2017. So very relevant still. And it's also a movie.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Where the actress who played Hermione had to do an American accent. Yeah, Emma Watson did an American accent. I never saw the movie. I should watch that.
And the guy who plays the Flash is also a secondary character.
Which version of the Flash? The WB version or the DC Universe version?
The DC Universe version.
Nice.
Cool. Who's a better choice?
And also the guy that played Percy Jackson in the two movies that never went anywhere.
Percy
Jackson is the main character.
Oh, nice. Well, see, look at that. More reason to watch the movie.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, the Mesa County School District tried to remove, I don't remember which book it was. If you look up the Cal Intellectual Freedom Committee, the award, I think it was 5 years ago, went to anonymous Mesa County School District librarians because they challenged the challenge and won against the challenge. So the challenge, I don't remember what the book was for, but it relates directly here to our community. And actually the Mesa County School District, Mesa County Valley School District, won the Colorado Association of Libraries Intellectual Freedom Award that year for standing up to the attempt to ban a book from their curriculum. Mm-hmm. And then I believe it was earlier this year, late 2019, a similar thing came up in Steamboat Springs. The high school was trying to put on a play, and some parents protested and tried to ban it. And some school staff fought back against that ban. And it turned out that what had happened was that the play or the – I can't remember the work of – the work's title, but the school district had a policy in place for handling challenge titles, but they did not follow their own policy in saying that they weren't going to put on this play. And so the staff that challenged it were able to have that decision reversed because it didn't follow the school district's own policy. So banning books is still happening, like now, particularly in educational institutions, and it directly affected Mesa County school libraries some years ago. So just another bit of trivia for you.
It's always really interesting when parents try to challenge those books that are meant to help your kid discover parts of themselves or... I mean, we actually kind of talked a little bit about it with the last episode with Ike, where you need that information to make your own opinion about things. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if you don't have access to that information, how can you understand or know where you stand on that type of thing?
And we do, just for the, you know, the interest of people listening at home, there is a process if you think of a book at Mesa County Libraries should not be on the shelf. We do have a process for that. You can speak to a staff member, and you'll receive what's called a request for reconsideration of materials form. You can express why you think it isn't, you know, supposed to be where it is. And while we historically don't pull a lot of things, we might be alerted to something we weren't aware of. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it ends up with a reclassification. Like if it's a graphic novel that lived in the teen section, but it's a little bit more violent or mature than maybe most of those other graphic novels, we can move it to the adult nonfiction section. Mm-hmm. Or if it's in kids, it might get moved to teens. Like we don't want to say that there's never going to be a response to that. There is always, I mean, people always evaluate those claims. Real human people always look and evaluate those claims. But yeah, the freedom to read often trumps like our own different sensibilities. And relating back to the previous point, 2017, Western Slope School District ordered librarians to stop circulating 13 Reasons Why during the kind of suicide pandemic. And anyway, it was rescinded. That order was eventually rescinded. But I don't know if that's what it was about, but that was something that happened recently in our own community. Yeah. So.
And for those who don't know, Mesa County has the highest suicide rate in the nation. So that's probably why they came up with this request or challenged the book, is because 13 Reasons Why deals with suicide in teenagers, which Mesa County has a very bad history with.
Well, what's interesting is you could easily take that as an opportunity to have a conversation about it. I remember, I think it was when the television show on Netflix came out that there was that resurgence, because that book came out when I was in high school. I bawled like a baby through it because you really felt like, dang it, this girl, if all these things didn't happen, she could have had a shot of not wanting to kill herself. But instead of like opening up that dialogue, we're like, no, we're just going to shut it down and not talk about it.
I think that's also why libraries really enjoy Banned Books Week, is because it gives us an opportunity to have conversations about those topics and to give a safe space for people to come and talk about those topics as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much for sharing your favorite band books with us, Andy.
Glad to be here anytime.
Yeah, we'll look forward to having you on again. I'm sure we'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next guest that we have to talk about her favorite band book is Andrea, our teen services coordinator. She is frequently on the podcast. Welcome back, Andrea.
Hi, thanks so much for having me
again. Yeah, of course. So let's get started and just talk about your favorite band book.
Yeah, it was really hard pick. I'm sure a lot of people are going to struggle with this. So I just went with one that I felt was, I wanted to talk about a teen book because that's something I read a lot just for my work. And one of my favorite books that has been published in recent years that did correspondingly just happen to get banned within the past couple years is The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. And this book was her debut novel. It was published in 2017. And just to give our listeners a heads up, this book does deal with death, shooting, and various traumatic events. And it does, one of the events that is dealt with is the shooting of a black boy by a white police officer. So if that's something that you don't really want to listen to right now, or, you know, I totally understand, but I just wanted to give you that heads up in case you want to fast forward a little bit. But that's what I'm going to be talking about today is The Hate U Give. So yeah, like I was saying, it was published in 2017. It was made into a movie, actually, in 2018. I still need to finish it. It was really good, though. The disc skipped. So it was based on a short story Angie Thomas wrote in response to the shooting of Oscar Grant III, who was a black man who was killed by a police officer. The police officer, it was a complicated case, but he was ultimately convicted of involuntary manslaughter. And as a response to that event happening, Angie Thomas decided to write a short story, which then evolved into the book, The Hate U Give. It is on the American Library Association's top 11 most challenged book list of 2018. Its reasons for challenge were listed as banned and challenged because it was deemed anti-cop and for profanity, drug use, and sexual references. And in Texas, it was actually removed from one school district's shelves for a period of time. It was returned, but you have to now have a parent's permission, I believe, to be able to check it out from the library. So you have to get your parent to write you a note, I think. I don't know all the details, but you do have to get a parent's permission. Anyhow, with that introduction to that book, the actual plot of the book is it's about a 16-year-old girl named Star. She's a black girl who lives in a poor, predominantly black neighborhood with her family. But she attends this elite private school where most of the people who attend that school are white, and most of the people who attend that school are rich, and she has white friends and friends of other races as well, but she has a lot of white friends at that school and a white boyfriend. And she doesn't feel like her two worlds, like her home life and her school life, can correspond at all. So that is a constant tension throughout the book, is her trying to keep those two worlds separate from each other. One night, she's reconnecting with some old friends from childhood, and she meets up with her best friend from childhood named Khalil, who she hasn't talked with in a long time. Khalil is a young black man, and she catches a ride home with him that night. And they're, you know, in driving back home, but on their way back, they're stopped by a police officer who happens to be white. Khalil is ordered to exit the car, and while he is outside, he leans in the driver's side window to check on Star. As he does so, he is shot and killed by the police officer. So Star has to see her friend, one of her best friends, bleed out in front of her. And it's a very traumatic event. And she's the only witness besides the police officer to this event. So after that happens, Khalil's death becomes a national news story. And no one knows that Star was the witness except for her immediate family. They're the only people who know. So she has to deal with, she obviously is involved in the investigation, they interview her and stuff, but very quickly, the narrative has turned towards that Khalil must have been a bad person if that happened to him. And based on her understanding of him as her friend, you know, it's very hard for her to understand why they would be saying these kind of things about him. So she has to very quickly decide, though, her home life and her school life, which she's worked so hard to keep separate up to this point, are converging. And she has to decide how involved does she want to get into the movement and the activism that's coming up around Khalil's death. It's a really wonderful book in many ways. It's very devastating, as you can imagine, reading about, I can't even imagine, you know, losing a friend at such a young age, let alone losing a friend to like a violent events like that. The book isn't just about that. You know, it's very easy for it to sound like, wow, that book is just going to be about incredibly depressing and everything. And it is quite sad. But there's also a lot of love and a lot of joy in this book as well. There's a lot of humor, actually, surprisingly, just with Star's interactions with her friends. She has a really wonderful family. There's just so much love and so much nurturing that happens within her family. And so she talks about, like, her parents are her OTP, her one true pairing. And they're just adorable together. But, you know, so it's really nice to see that element to it that kind of helps leaven it a little bit so it's not quite so sad. But there's also a lot of tension, you know, within her family, too, of, like, they live in a neighborhood that is dangerous. Like, their gunshots are a regular sound and everything like that. And it shows that tension within her family of her father wants to stay in the neighborhood because he's like, how are things going to get better if we just run away and we don't try and, like, fight to make our community better? While her mother is on the other side of things and she's like, yes, I want to make our community better, but I also don't want our children to get shot by a stray bullet. And that is a real concern in that area. You know, it's a really wonderful book. I would really recommend it to anyone who is interested at all in a lot of the activism and conversations about race that are happening in this country right now. But also if you're just looking for a good read, Angie Thomas is a wonderful writer. She crafts her plot and her dialogue really, really well. It's just a pleasure to read, as sad as it can get sometimes.
Yeah. And this book also won the Coretta Scott King Award, which recognizes outstanding books for young adults and children by African American authors and illustrators that reflect the African American experience. So it's written by somebody that does have a perspective that matches with the character of the book.
Yeah, thank you so much for pointing that out. And yeah, it absolutely deserves all the awards it won. It's a really wonderful book. So it makes sense that this book is challenged in a lot of ways because it is a controversial topic a lot of these days. But, you know, I still think it's one that I would recommend to any teens who are interested in these sorts of issues. That sort of thing. So, yeah. I'm really glad I read it, and I would recommend it to anyone who's interested. But, yes, it is good to be forewarned and to know going in that it does deal with some really heavy topics, so you can be prepared for that. Things are hard right now with the world the way it is, with COVID and everything else. So, you know, take care of yourselves. If you think that this isn't the right time for you to read that sort of book, please just take a breather and come back to it later. So, yes.
And as we were talking about with Andy previously, although that these have hard topics and are challenged for reasons that may make sense, it's good that we are able to talk about those and have that material to read to get those experiences and that information.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I can definitely see why some people would maybe not want to read the book for themselves. I can totally get that. But yeah, I completely agree. I think just because there is a hard topic doesn't mean, like, the way to avoid it is saying, like, no one gets to read this now. It's like, maybe it's just not the right time for you to read that book. So yeah, I would definitely recommend this book. So
thank you so much, Andrea.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm sure we'll have you on again in the future.
I'm sure, yes.
Our next guest is Trevor. Trevor has been on the podcast before. Thank you for joining us, Trevor.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Of course. Trevor is going to tell us about his favorite band book. So, let's get started.
It's not just one of my favorite band books, but it's the number one most banned or challenged book of last year and also of 2018. And it was in the top 10 in 2016 and 2017.
Wow.
Yeah. Trevor, you're bragging.
It came out in 2015. Well, I looked up the list of books that were most challenged, and I realized, wow, number one is a book that I really think is great. And it bothers me that it is challenged and banned so much. We should talk about it. And that book is George by Alex Gino, which came out in 2015.
Why was it banned? Do you know?
Well, it is a book about a girl who realizes that the way that other people see her is not the way she feels on the outside. So everybody calls her George, and everyone treats her as if she is a boy. Her brother calls her a brother, and she knows that that's not true. She's actually a girl. She thinks of herself as Melissa. Mm. It's pretty amazing the way it's done throughout this book. It's all from her perspective. So it can be a little bit jarring at first because there's all this talk about George. There's lots of reference to George, the main character. Mm-hmm. But then all the pronouns used for George are she, her, hers, because it's from her perspective, and she knows that she's a girl. The big thing that happens in this book, the thing that the story kind of all hinges on, is that in her school, they're putting on a play of Charlotte's Web. They've read the book in class, and now they're going to all audition, and everybody has to have some kind of part in the play, even if it's just, well, I shouldn't say just, but even if it's working backstage or making mm-hmm. costumes or something. She has decided she really wants to play Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really wants to play Charlotte. And at auditions, she doesn't read one of the boy parts. She reads some of Charlotte's lines. And the teacher at first is kind of shocked and almost a little bit offended by that. And then the teacher says, I'm sorry, George, but there's just no way I could give you, a boy, this part. There's so many girls who wants this part. And the part actually eventually goes to George's closest friend, who's a girl named Kelly. Mm. And I can't give away too much of what else happens through it, but the story is really about George struggling with these feelings of feeling really pretty certain that she's a girl and knowing that people don't see her that way. And whenever people do anything that refers to the fact that they see her as a boy, it's really awful to her. Really makes her feel terrible because that's just not how she feels.
Yeah. This book has won several awards, yeah. including the Lambda Literary Award, which recognizes the best LGBTQ+ books published across dozens of categories. And it's also a kids chapter book. So this is something that is marketed for kids primarily,
yeah.
Which I think is really great.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's won a bunch of awards, which is wonderful. And, you know, that's partly why there's a controversy about this, is because people like me and a lot of people who review books, you know, it's not just LGBTQ groups that have awarded George. It's all kinds of book kind of groups and school journals and things like that, saying that this book is really great and wonderful. And then there's the backlash, because then parent groups, maybe school districts, realize that this is a book about a trans girl. Mm-hmm. And so then that becomes a big problem.
Yes.
And it has been a problem for 5 years now. So I just wanted to tell you a few interesting things about the book and about Alex Gino and their struggle with having this book that is very popular. It was Alex Gino's debut novel. They've written 2 books since then, and I still haven't actually read them. I need to. But since George keeps ending up on these, at the top of these Ben book lists, Alex Gino keeps having to talk about what it's like. Mm. One challenge was in 2017 in Wichita, Kansas, a school district didn't get the book. They would have normally got the book. You know, any book that gets this much recognition, you would definitely want to get. You know, we would always get a book with this kind of recognition on our shelves. But the school district didn't want to because it has a trans girl in it. Mm-hmm. Or I don't remember exactly their reasons given. But anyhow, they were basically self-censoring. And Gino found out about that. And so they made a fundraiser online. And I think the goal was met in an hour or something mm-hmm. like that.
It does say it took less than an hour to do so.
Right.
And the reason that it was... it was decided against, is what they say, is that it cited language and references that are inappropriate for young children.
Right. And so, of course, we get, you hear things like that a lot mm-hmm. when it comes to kids' books, and people are trying to ban them or challenge them. we just constantly try to send the message out there that, of course, every parent has absolutely every right to decide what their child should read. Mm-hmm. But they only have the right to decide what their child should read. Yeah. They don't have the right to limit access to what other parents' children might read. I know trans kids out there who this book or books like this could literally save a life. Trans kids' lives are very fragile, and we know that there's a high suicide rate with trans kids. And that's an amazing thing to think that a book in which they see themselves mirrored could make them feel like their life is worth living. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty amazing thing. And I know that's very heavy when we're talking about a book that's shelved in the Children's Center, but I really believe it's true. Let's see. In 2016, there was an author named Phil Bidner who reads other authors' books when he's invited to read. So he read Part of George in Texas at a school district. And because he read this book and recommended it, then he was suddenly uninvited to any other events. So that's kind of like almost soft censorship. They didn't say specifically that's why he was uninvited, but it seemed pretty obvious. A really neat thing about this book is that there's a great audiobook version of it.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I originally read the print version, but in preparing for this, I went back and listened to some of the audiobook because I found out that it's read by an actor who I really like.
Okay.
Her name is Jamie Clayton. She's well known for a few things. A couple of them are in the Netflix shows Sense8 and Designated Survivor, and she herself is a trans woman, which I think is really wonderful. We here at the library really believe in own voices, and that is an idea and a movement which says that if a book is about a certain marginalized person, perhaps it would be best if that book was written by that same marginalized person or from that same marginalized community.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's great that a book about a trans girl written by a genderqueer author is read by a trans woman. And she does a great, great job with it, too.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Speaking of own voices, Trevor, you actually compiled a bunch of book lists for kids. And you focused on making sure that they had own voices. So people that live those experiences are the one that write about those experiences. So that is on our website at mesacountylibraries.org. It is under the Kids tab and then Book Lists for Kids, and it is Our Diverse World. There's LGBTQ+, Latin American, female, diverse abilities, etc.
Yeah, we realized that we were being a little bit lazy about our Diverse World tab on our book lists. A couple of months ago, we only had 3 different book lists there, and they weren't very fresh, too.
Because,
you know, sometimes you put a book on a book list and it doesn't get read, doesn't get checked out for 2 years, and so then we take it out of the collection. Anyhow, I just decided, and my boss, Sydney, head of youth services, agreed that we needed to have better lists. So once I got started, I realized that it needed to be a lot of lists. So there are 14 of them. Yeah, African American voices, Latin American voices, Middle Eastern voices, LGBTQ, people experiencing homelessness and poverty, female voices, lots of great things there. So if you want to read books about marginalized people or just written by, sometimes it's not necessarily about, doesn't have anything to do with their marginalizedness, but just written by someone like that, you can find those kids' books really easily now on our website, which is really great.
And some of those are banned or have been challenged.
Definitely.
Like And Tango Makes 3 and Being Jazz. Those are on the LGBTQ+.
Yeah.
Those have been challenged and or banned.
Sadly, more than half of the books challenged recently are challenged because of LGBTQ content. So a lot of people are unhappy that books have anything to do with gay people.
Mm-hmm.
And decide that then no one should have access to them, which is really unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we fight against that here. We're lucky here that we have a really awesome administration. And while we are interested in if someone had a problem with a book on our shelves, I can't imagine any case where it would actually get taken off of our shelves.
Yeah, as Andy mentioned earlier, we often reclassify books if necessary.
Yeah, if that's appropriate.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it is appropriate. Mm-hmm. There was one time when a bunch of Star Wars comic books were in the children's center, and somebody brought them up, and they really did need to be in the teen area. Mm-hmm. And that was just totally appropriate, and that wasn't self-censorship, even though maybe it could be thought of that way. But sometimes things like that happen, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about the author Alex Gino. People often ask them what it's like to be an author of a book that's number one on the banned book list. And lots of kind of light humor about it, like, oh, that's too bad, but isn't it great too? Because don't your numbers go up? You know, and I've made jokes like that too, like, if you want a book to sell a lot, just challenge it. And then, you know, it gets a bunch of news and stuff. But Alex Gino talks about how that is not how they feel at all. So this is an article that's titled Alex Gino Shares What It's Like to Author the Number One Most Banned Book. So if I could just read some Alex Gino quotes for you.
Yes, please.
Alex Gino says, banning books is bad. Prohibiting access to information and stories is a dangerous practice. Attempts to do so are also poorly conceived and remarkably counter-effective. Light-hearted comments like, must be great for sales, and wish my book would get banned, sink in my stomach. I don't want this silver lining. Don't congratulate me on my dubious honor. If you are aggravated by the censorship I face, don't pass it back to me. I promise you, I am angrier than you are, even if I smile. Instead, use that energy to fight censorship. Kids lose out when books are challenged, especially transgender kids, deeply in need of seeing reflections of themselves. And while most direct challenges fail and the books aren't taken off the shelves, they make it easier for soft censorship to creep in, like when books aren't purchased for fear of possible controversy, are shelved in a restrictive area, or are left out of relevant book talks to avoid potential pushback.
Oh.
I just thought Alex Gino said that so well. Definitely better than I could. And it's great to hear that from the author who's experiencing it mm-hmm. so directly, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure they would be more happy if their book wasn't banned and, you know, with the sales that they got off that instead of having it come along with this bigger picture.
Yep.
Well, it sounds like the point of most of these books that we've actually been talking about are representation. Mm-hmm. And we would much rather it be able to be in the hands of people who can see themselves represented versus it being challenged and not even available to the masses.
Yeah.
Duh.
That's probably why they did that fundraiser and sent all those books to the Wichita, Kansas school district that didn't even receive it. So
yeah. I'll give you a little piece of trivia on a much lighter note. I just learned this. I'm kind of surprised I'd never heard it. Alex Gino's original title for the book was Girl George, which makes sense to me. It's kind of a play on
Boy George.
Boy George. Which makes sense because reading the book, I was always a little bit confused why they were using the name George so much, even though George doesn't think of herself as George. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, the publishers decided, no, we don't like Girl George. We're just going to go with George.
I remember reading a book, and I don't know if it's challenged or not, but it's a young adult novel called One Day, and it's written by... All right. It's written from the perspective of one person who wakes up in a different body every day.
Oh, that became a movie.
Yep, it was a movie. And then I think it was like a YouTube short series with Topher Grace, of all people.
Oh, interesting.
But when you first start to read it, you don't know what it's about. Like the way I would just, as a kid, just shovel books into my bag and be like, all right, I'm reading these ones this week. And it was really hard to understand the concept until you got into the rhythm of it and the person began to explain their situation, and you're like, oh, okay. But sometimes the title, it can be nice the way the book cover lays so that you're just into it, and then you get a little confused, and then you figure it out. And then it's a little more special that way sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this with us, Trevor.
It's my pleasure. We want to have books representing everyone on our shelves.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
We We are now joined with Rachel Davis.
Howdy, howdy.
Hi, she's a page at Mesa County Libraries. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
Rachel is awesome at art and is currently making her own graphic novels. So if you are interested in graphic novels at all, please talk to Rachel. She is one of the best people to talk to about that.
I don't have a life. It's what I fill the void with.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, and I am very interested to hear about your favorite band books.
Or not favorite
or
band
not
books.
Oh, well, they are my favorite. It's a funny thing. I have a very complicated relationship with them, the one I chose. So it's not necessarily a book so much as it's a collection, but it's the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series of books, I guess. Mm-hmm. The ones illustrated by Stephen Gamell, not the Brett Hellquist re-releases, which are cool, but... well, I did a little reading into it just to make sure that I had everything straight, and... I believe it was in 91 when the book started getting pushes for being banned from schools and everything because the illustrations were too scary. And they weren't kidding because I don't know if you've ever read.
Yes.
Stephen Gamell's a wonderful artist. I will say that. But his work is horrifying. It's And in these books, he drew some terrifying things. I mean, you had a wide variety of zombies and, like, scary animals.
Scarecrows.
Scarecrows. Harold.
Yes.
Good old Harold.
Yes.
So, you know, in a way, I'm working for the library. I'm obviously very opposed to censorship. I think that all information should be free to people. But in the case of this, I can kind of understand the... push to ban things because it was not child appropriate in any sense of the word.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think that goes back. We kind of have talked about this with other guests about how you could reclassify it to not be in the children's center.
Yes. Yeah.
It can still be available, but maybe just not in the children's center.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've often had this conversation, you and I, Rachel, about the ones that messed us up the most. And mine was the girl with the green scarf.
The thing is, I think that was actually from a different book series.
Oh, really?
That was In a Dark, Dark Room and Other Scary Stories.
Are
which
you, seriously?
Which Gamell did not illustrate, but was horrifying in its own right. That one also scared me senseless as a kid. So I can still see that being scary.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Harold the Scarecrow.
Oh, Harold.
That was the worst.
Harold is just horrifying,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they really stick with you.
Yeah. What about you, Emmy? Are you familiar with Stephen Gamell's kind of works and the stuff he did with Scary Stories?
I'm somewhat familiar with it. It's funny, I'm also an artist, but whenever I read like picture books or graphic novels, my brain just switches into reading the text. And actually, I just finished the Umbrella Academy suite this weekend. Yes. And my husband's like, did you even like look at the pictures just because I blazed through it? I was like, of course I did. He's like, I don't know how much information you processed. And I'm remembering, like, yes, there is that fear tactic in those books that's obviously used to a perfect point.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think the illustrations traumatized me as much because I was focused more on like the terrifying words.
That's fair. And you know, with credit to the stories that that Alvin Schwartz picked for the collections, he picked some scary stories. Like some of them were like, oh, this isn't that bad. But you know, there was, what was the one about the guy who pushed his wife into a meat grinder.
Oh,
and
he
started making sausage out of like everybody in town, and then he fell into the grinder and he became sausage.
Yeah.
Oh, Sweeney Todd. No, just kidding.
Oh, yeah. You know, for kids.
There's actually an article that I'm looking at right now, and this mom said that back in 1995 her son brought this book home. And she was reading it with him, and the story is called Wonderful Sausage.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, right away, I thought of Jeffrey Dahmer, and this was way past being scary. And so she appealed to her local library to have it removed, but they just moved it to the adult section instead.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Those were terrifying. It did scare me.
I mean, I can say with some hindsight that stuff was objectively not for children.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's just funny. Like, I think, you know, back in the 90s, it was such a different time that it's like, you know, kids are tough. They can handle this.
Yeah. I've seen some of your art. Does that kind of art style influence the work that you do?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a major influence. Yeah. I really, really adore his style. I mean, it traumatized me, but I love it.
I was going to say, so even though it traumatized you, you still got something out of it and that it...
It's clearly layered into the subconscious for you.
it's like one of those crepe cakes of trauma and inspiration.
You're describing life, I think.
Yeah, you're a tortured artist.
I'm a deeply tortured artist.
And it all started with Scary Stories.
Friggin' Stephen Gamel or Gamel, however you pronounce his name.
Stephen G.
Stevie G.
Stevie G.
It looks like in the early 2000s, it earned the number 7 slot on the ALA's most challenged. And that, interestingly, the Satanic Panic was one of the reasons why it was banned, because it made horror, like the horror genre, a target in the 2000s.
That surprises me not at all.
Yeah.
But also it's like, you think if anything, that kind of stuff would discourage people from messing around with demons and that sort of thing.
Didn't you learn your lesson from the book?
These guys are scary. You don't want to mess with that.
You're going to have a scarecrow stare at you if you are messing around with satanic stuff.
Harold's going to get you.
That also recently became a movie, which I refuse to see.
See, I went and saw it in theaters.
Did you like it?
I loved it. Really? Guillermo del Toro was, I believe, the producer?
I think
so. Okay, you put it in his hands.
Yeah, I mean, he did beautifully. Like, the amount of attention to detail and the work on the costumes, it looks just like the drawings came to life. And it was... such a beautiful labor of love. And it was kind of twisted in with this whole, like, retro 80s, like, you know, kid adventure Goonies sort of feel. So, like, I think it was a nice mix.
It's kind of like Scooby-Doo. Like, nobody believes the kids that something is going on.
Exactly.
But all I have in my mind is a scene in the commercial where Harold is running down the hallway after them. And I'm just like, I can't.
Harold is pretty horrifying in that movie. They did not skimp on detail with him.
So if you want to be permanently scarred, read Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark and then watch the movie.
Oh, yeah. By all means, please do. It's just, I love the books, but I also hate them. I'm sure my parents hate them way more than I do because they were the ones who had to deal with me freaking out when I came home. So.
I think we've talked about it where you said for a while you were like just clinging on to your mom after reading them because you were so scared of them.
I do remember there was an incident, and I think it was actually from the book that the Girl with the Green Ribbon came from. I checked it out from... this very library and I was so scared by that particular story that at midnight I woke up my parents because I didn't want to sleep in the same room as that book because I was afraid the Green Ribbon Lady was gonna get me.
I swear it was in Scary Stories. It's probably not.
I mean, there's a lot of stories about like creepy dead ladies, so you know, it's I can understand, like, they all kind of merge together at a point.
Yeah, they do. Also, just a last quick fact, it recently popped up on the annual top 10 challenged books in 2012. So it's still being challenged.
Yep, that sounds about right. I mean, it's just, I think it's like one of those things where it's just, it's not for kids. And that's okay. That's okay. You know, just put it with the adult stuff because there's plenty of traumatized adults who love it.
Yeah, right.
But it's, I know that I wouldn't feel comfortable if my kids or my niece and nephew were reading it. Yeah. So,
and you can make that choice for your kids, and other parents can make that choice.
And
for
that's
their
why
kids.
It's so important to, you know, look into a little, you know, what your kids are reading and everything, and the content they're taking in.
Yes,
because some stuff is just scary.
Unless you want them to become wonderful artists like Rachel.
Oh, shucks.
Thanks so much for joining us, Rachel.
Thank you all for having me.
Yes, of course. Our next guest is Logan Logan is an information services library assistant. Thanks for joining us, Logan.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here again.
For those of you that may not know, Logan was in our Animal Crossing episode, which was really fun. You should go back to listen to that. She also has starred in a lot of our cooking videos on social media lately. So thanks for joining us, Logan. What are we going to be talking about today for banned books?
So I found this children's book. It's called Prince and Knight by Daniel, I want to say Hack, but that's a terrible last name. I'm sure it's pronounced differently. But I found it when I was out at the Fruita Library because it's beautiful. It's got great colors. It's adorable. And as I was reading through it, I learned it was the story of a prince who is searching for a spouse, can't find one, is then attacked by a dragon, saved by a knight, and we all live happily ever after. And it's a really chill book. It's pretty cute. I don't even think they kiss in it, because, you know, kisses are grody and cooties.
Yeah, right.
But this book still got banned in a couple different places, and I can tell you all about that if you're curious.
Yes,
too.
Let's hear about it, please.
So,
nah, that's okay.
Yeah.
The research I did.
Obviously.
The first one was in West Virginia. It was banned because a pastor believed it would indoctrinate young boys into the LGBT lifestyle. And he was upset that children were being led into sin, especially with taxpayer money. Hmm. And they don't even, like, kiss in this book. Like, they, like, get married and, like, are just, like, leaning on each other, and it's really cute. This is not indoctrinating anybody, I wouldn't say. I also learned when I looked up the author that he wrote it because he wanted to see more LGBT characters that were in, like, kids' books and show that they were worthy of love and that it was not this weird thing. So he wasn't looking to indoctrinate anybody either. He was just looking to have a little bit more representation so that kids wouldn't think it's the weirdest thing, not, like, seeking out, hey, come into our lifestyle, you know? So I was super confused how it got banned in that case, but it also got banned for another similar reason in just in West Virginia and other Virginia, one of the Virginias. So. That's the first one. It also is apparently the fifth most challenged book in 2019, according to ALA. And it's like, if you guys may have to go look up the book if you get a chance, but it's like pastel colors. It's very chill.
It looks like a Mary Blair style illustration.
Yeah, like, I was drawn to it just because the illustrations are so cute. Like, they're very simple but bright and colorful. And I don't know. It doesn't seem like an evil book to me.
It's kind of interesting because I looked up that book in GLAAD, which is an organization that works really closely with LGBTQ.
Uh-huh.
Their president actually made a statement on the banning of this book.
Yeah, and it was like a thing.
Yeah, says that the decision to remove The Prince and Knight from the shelves of this public library is an act of discrimination, plain and simple. Inclusive children's books do not indoctrinate, but allow LGBTQ families and their children the chance to see themselves reflected in the world.
Can you imagine? Like, I want children to feel like they are worthy of love, even if they feel this way. Can you imagine thinking that's bad? Like, I want everyone to feel like they're worthy of love and that they can be a hero. Like, I don't know.
Those are really cute pictures.
They're super. Do you want to look at it while I talk? Yeah. So, yeah, there was that. And then I think the other quote I found was that it was from the National Coalition Against Censorship, because, like you said, it became this whole thing and, like, different organizations were weighing in, et cetera, et cetera. And it was, all parents have the right to influence their own child's education. Equally true. No parent has the right to dictate the education of all children based on their own personal beliefs.
That's something that we keep coming back to in, like, every conversation.
Like, you're totally fine being like, I don't want my kid to read that just yet, or I'm not comfortable with my kid reading that now. Like, as a parent, that is your decision. But, like, you can't dictate that for other children. And the bit about the pastor who was upset about taxpayer money, like, unfortunately, taxpayer money goes for everybody, and you don't get to say what everyone gets to do. That's kind of why taxes work. Like, so, you know, whatever you want to do, vote for the people you think will do it. And that's what we can do, unfortunately, as citizens. So, I don't know. I thought it was such a great book. Like I said, if you get a chance, do read through it.
Yes. It's something that Mesa County Libraries owns.
Mm-hmm. So put this on hold, listeners, if you want to check out how cool it is.
Yeah, go on to our catalog or look for it on our shelves.
The other thought that I had while thinking about this topic was that Grand Junction has a huge rate of suicide in general, and our teen suicide rate is pretty alarming as well. And there's been numerous organizations that have been trying to fix this over the years. And I think one of the things that would help that is making young kids and teens feel included and not ostracized, even if they are LGBT, et cetera, et cetera. And I think having books like this in our library is a step towards doing that. It might be a small thing, but I think it definitely has ripples across the community and through time.
That's definitely something that we talked about with both Andy.
Yeah, I'm sure it comes up a lot.
And Trevor.
Well, all these issues, if that's what you want to call them, are severely interconnected.
Yes.
If people don't see themselves represented, they're going to feel alone, and that isolation is going to eventually go untreated or untalked.
Yeah.
That's where people end up.
You know what I actually came across the other day when I was looking, you know, just perusing the internet, is this person who said, I can't remember who it was, but they said, as a white person, I can go into any bookstore, any library, and I can pick up a book and know that I will be represented in that book. And that is not the case with LGBTQ, people of color, indigenous people, black people, etc. And so that can be very damaging to be compared or be forced or whatever to read things that don't represent you or your life experiences.
Like, if I have the choice to pick up any book as a white person, be like, oh, look at someone who looks like me. Everybody else should have that choice too.
Exactly.
Like, it should, there should be options for everybody. And I think we do a pretty good job of that here at the library.
Yeah.
I was listening to some panel or something a couple weeks ago, and it was a bunch of different teen authors, many of who were people of color who were writing books about teens of color, et cetera, et cetera. And one of them talked about how when he was growing up, there was nothing. Like, he couldn't look at any of the movies, none of the TV shows had anything that represented him or any characters that looked like him. If none of the heroes look like you, do you start to wonder if you can become one? If none of the princes and the stories look like you or act like you, do you wonder if you're worthy of being a prince? So I'm glad that's changing. Like, this author, I think, mentioned that now his daughter had a lot more options, and he was happy for that and would keep working towards it. So.
And that's why we fight against censorship.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you so much for joining us, Logan. And we look forward to having you on again.
Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you.
We are now joined by Elise. She's the Palisade branch manager. If you ever have a chance to go out to Palisade, the town is beautiful and the library is beautiful, and you can visit Elise. Thank you so much for joining us, Elise.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Let's talk about some banned books.
Absolutely.
What, give us a couple, if you can't narrow it down, of your favorite banned books.
I love challenging the status quo. I know your previous guest, Trevor, had mentioned an article, I think it was, of it's a good marketing sales tactic to have your book or your item banned or challenged. And I'm not going to lie, that's why I picked up Harry Potter many moons ago, and The Da Vinci Code many years ago, is it was creating a lot of buzz, for lack of a better word. But I like how it challenges the, I don't want to say the stereotype or the cliche, but, and I don't want to go so far as to say worldview, but definitely gives you a different perspective of how other people experience this thing called life. And just the different points of view, recognizing that we're all, believe it or not, we're all connected and the same on some level. I know, like, Shakespeare kind of gets brought in several centuries later, and it's, we're still different clothes, but it's the same stuff, essentially, that we're dealing with. Challenging, I don't want to say the norm, because what is normal, you know? As Morticia Adams says, what is chaos for the fly is normal for the spider. So sometimes it's good to get a different perspective.
Sounds like a good mix of, like, rebelliousness, but also connection.
Yeah.
for sure.
And you do banned book story times.
I did, BC, yes, before COVID. I did. And there's some, most people, you know, they're not surprised with Gone with the Wind or The Color Purple or anything kind of race related. The most surprise I usually get is from children's books. Mm-hmm. Winnie the Pooh, Wizard of Oz, which my favorite reason for that one being banned is women in a position of power. And that's both The Good Witches of the North and South and the Bad Witches of the East and West. Mm. And I just think it's hilarious because the Wicked Witch of the West terrified me as a kid. But yes, she's a woman in power. So I guess that's scary in its own right, I suppose.
Can't have that.
Right, exactly. I think The Lorax, you know, the foresting industry had a big say about The Lorax. And, you know, I just think, yeah, some of the reasons, not that they're not valid. I mean, we all benefit from deforestation. But I also think it's good to, and since we're in a library, to let our proverbial hair down. And I think banned books kind of help us do that a little bit.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this as all of our guests have come through today. I think one of the reasons people feel the need to challenge books is because it exposes our biases a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I can't speak for all the white women in the room.
Right.
But I've definitely been uncovering a lot of my privilege the last couple of months and realizing like, oh, I've had it a lot easier. And when you pick up a challenged or a banned book and you realize most of these experiences that you're reading, someone actually went through, or it's a compilation of those stories to tell a greater arc for more impact. That's when you realize, like, just because it's not true for me doesn't mean it's not true for somebody else.
Right.
Exactly.
And I always feel like I learned something from a banned book. I did read, I think last year I read the graphic novel Drama, which was on the top 10 last year, 2018. Have to do some math here. And, you know, as an adult, I read it and I'm just like, psh, don't see any big deal here. And mainly takes place in a high school theater club. And I was in high school theater. So I was like, well, yeah, of course all of this is going on. Have you not been in a theater club before? I mean, goodness. But that being said, I can also understand why some adults may not want their children to read it. I wanted to put it in the hands of my kid right away, but she's a stinker and wasn't interested.
That's so. Kind of a theme that's come across in the previous interviews or talks we've been doing with guests, is that just because some people don't want their children or other people exposed to that, that doesn't mean that they can make that choice for the whole population.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm lucky enough, this is a slight digression, and I promise there's a connection. My mom is a nurse, and so anything health-related or sexually related, she was always upfront with me about, because she wanted me, she knew I would be getting that information, but she didn't know where, so it might as well come from her. And I kind of feel the same way with my own daughter, who's 11. I know, especially, well, and in my day, we didn't have YouTube, TikTok, or Google, you know, and my daughter, goodness knows, all the kinds of stuff that she can get to at a press of a button on the interwebs. So I might as well give her the proper information. That being said, probably won't have her read 50 Shades of Grey anytime soon, but I certainly won't deny her of that, because I feel it's also, you know, education. And
well, there's plenty of nonfiction books that cover a lot of the questions kids that age may have that they can easily have access to. Again, the parent's discretion can always be a guiding light, but it's eventually that child becomes an adult and they get to make those decisions for themselves.
I don't know. I think my favorite part is just the connection and the exposing what you said earlier, kind of our own biases. I don't want to say hidden. I think they're becoming less hidden as time goes on. But yeah, no, I always love Banned Books Week.
It's my favorite week of the year.
My favorite.
Is there a banned book that you read that you were particularly like influenced by that really made you think about banned books and have a hunkering or hankering. I don't know why I said hunkering. Hankering to read more banned books.
This is a problem when you read too
many
books.
I know. It is a problem.
Like, what's the first banned book that you read that you were like,
oh, gosh. Oh, so it's probably Harry Potter. Mm. But I mean, I grew up with Winnie the Pooh. I grew up with Wizard of Oz and wasn't affected by the things that I apparently should have been affected by. And they were just fun stories. Probably, and it's not quite a domino effect. It kind of had the opposite effect. So I haven't read 50 Shades of Grey, like, beginning to end, but I've read blurbs and I didn't like it. And it's not for all the reasons that people assume. I think it's poorly written, and I'm sure there's going to be comments aplenty about that. But I bring it up because that book, because I, you know, read articles about, you know, it's not representational of that particular lifestyle, or it's not a, realistic representation of the BDSM lifestyle. So that kind of led me to, oh, well, what is? And then I went way back a couple centuries to the Marquis de Sade, who was locked up in the loony bin, but he was a marquis, so he couldn't be beheaded. I'm sure he was at some point. But so where I'm going with that is 50 Shades kind of had the opposite effect of, I wanted to know, like, if people thought this was really bad, then what not inspired it, because Twilight inspired it.
Yeah.
But find out more. I don't know. I can't quite pin it down.
I think that's almost, I don't know if that's almost an intentional part, not intentional, but like, to have somebody want to go explore more about the reasons why it was challenged is maybe one of the good parts of banned books. The very few good parts of banning books is, but that it brings attention to things that people can then go and investigate for themselves.
Right.
Yeah. I found the dictionary very interesting. I didn't know that was banned.
Sure is. Was. Yeah. Is, was. Guess it depends. I will say I'm a little irritated that, and it's a double negative, and I'm going to mess it up. Irrelevant has officially been added as an actual word, and grammarians everywhere are cringing.
Yeah.
So that's a little, but that's clearly not the word of why it's banned, or words, I should say. I like graphic novels because I think people... And I'm just now getting on the graphic novel bandwagon. So, like, the two that I've read have been controversial. And I don't know. I mean, I know it's the subject matter, but I also don't know if people, because the word graphic is in it, they assume it will also be, like, a picture representation of the themes, and it's totally not at all. So I always find that kind of interesting.
So if you want to have a more in-depth conversation about banned books and all the different types, I would recommend visiting Elise at the Palisade Branch.
Well, thank
going
you.
To one of her banned book story times when we can bring those back.
Hopefully soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome, guys. Thank you.
Yeah.